could see him. Maxwell Smith said, "It's going to be a very warm day, gentlemen." "Yeah," Preacher said, "and them bodies is going to bloat and stink before long, and we can't allow no buzzards in to tote that infected flesh off and spread the pox. We got to kill every one of them that lands. See them circling high up? They'll be coming in for breakfast right shortly. Ever seen a buzzard a-tearing at human flesh, Lieutenant?" "Thankfully, no. I have yet to witness that disgusting sight." "I have," the grizzled sergeant said. "In India. I hate the filthy buggers."
"No need for that," Preacher said. "They're just doing what God put them on earth to do. They don't know no better. I don't much care for rattlers, but I don't hate them. Human beings now, that's another matter. We got a brain, and God give us the power to think and reason things out. But there ain't no earthly reason for a human person to do bad things. I ain't got no use for human trash, none at all. I'd just as soon shoot them as have to look at them, and have, more than once."
"Law out here in the wilderness is, primitive, to say the least," Maxwell Smith said. Preacher cut his eyes to him.
"What it is final."
12. By noon, the health hazard was becoming a real concern. The day had turned out unusually warm, and the bodies were beginning to bloat and stink. Not one Indian had made a sound that the defenders could hear, shown himself, or fired a ball or arrow. The defenders had stayed busy killing the buzzard that had swooped in to dine on the dead. Finally, Preacher made up his mind.
"I got to go out there," he said to Gray Bull.
"Neither you or me," the mountain man replied. "And I think it ought to be me. I'm taking money from the soldier boys to scout."
"It better be me. You're as big as a damn grizzly bear and as clumsy as an armadillo. You'd stumble around out yonder and them Blackfeet would be sure to catch you. And I don't want to have to spend the rest of the day and night listening to you holler. You beller like a damn constipated hog."
"Mayhap you be partly right," the huge mountain man said. "Even if they catch you, you so damn ugly and miserable looking they'd probably feel sorry for you and run you off before you frighten their horses and cause their women to go barren. You can make yourself useful whilst I'm gone by gathering up some ropes and getting ready to drag them bodies off away so we can burn them. I know if I don't tell you what to do after I'm gone, you just sit around looking like a fat, dumb child and do nothing." "Them Injuns is over that ridge, Preacher," Gray Bull pointed and continued the insults. "That's south. As foolish as you are about directions, I want you to keep that double-humped ridge to your skinny rear end at all times. That way you might find your way back here by this time next week."
"Thank you kindly for the consideration. It's nice to know somebody cares."
"Oh, I don't care a twit for you," Gray Bull told him. "I'm just trying to keep you alive long enough so's you'll pay me that $15 you borrowed from me 10 years ago over on the Platte."
"It was more like $2, and it was on the Missouri, you ox. And I paid you back at the rendezvous the next year. You was so drunk you don't remember. Get out of here before I throw you over the damn walls."
The mountain men grinned at each other, for the moment, satisfied with their insults. Preacher checked his pistols and his hawken and dropped down from the ramparts, walking over to Lieutenant Maxwell Smith.
"I'm going out yonder to eyeball the situation," he told the officer. "I got me a hunch the Blackfeet's done pulled out, figuring their medicine is bad for this fight."
"I thought the savages always returned for their dead."
"They usual do. But in this case, they probably got so many dead and dying all around them, they just don't care no more. There ain't enough living to take care of the dead. We'll see. I'll be back."
Preacher wheeled about and walked to the rear of the post. The other trapper, Jim, wounded in the shoulder by an arrow, lay on a pallet near the rear gate.
"How's your wing?" Preacher asked him, squatting down beside the man. pains some, but I've been hurt worser. If the engine who handled that arrow had the pox, I reckon the infection was on the point. Probably. You've been scratched with vaccine. Last year, made me sicker than shit, too. I do know the feeling. I wintered with the pox some years back. You heard anything moving out back? No, and I've been listening careful and peeking out through the logs time to time. Ain't seen nothing neither. I think they's gone, preacher. Me too. I'm going out for an eyeballing. You watch your topknot out there, boy. These Blackfeet don't care no more. I gleaned that right off. See ya. Don't step on that damn stinking swole up body laying next to the logs. It might blow up. Preacher cracked the gate and squatted for a time, moving only his eyes, searching the hills and timber very carefully. The dead Blackfoot by the gate was all puffed up and smelled really bad. From the looks of him, he'd taken a full vat of boiling water, and it cooked him proper. He had died hard, but not as hard as lingering at death's door with the pox. Preacher dashed out and made the timber. There, he squatted down and listened just as hard as he looked. In the distance, the birds had returned and were singing. That was a good sign. He worked his way up a ridge, moving carefully. He almost stepped on the body of a pilgrim the engines had dragged off and tortured. Looked like they had kept him alive for several hours while they had their fun. From the looks of him, the pilgrim didn't appear like he'd thought it a damn bit funny. Preacher stepped over him and moved on to the crest of the ridge. He found another body there. It was an Eastern woman, and she'd been used hard, for they cut her throat and scalped her bare. She'd been a blonde, and that was a much sought-after trophy for a war lance. She lay on her back, bare legs spread wide, her eyes open and bugged out in shocked death. Preacher tried to close her eyes, but the lids were stiff and would not close. He gave up and moved on. He came upon a Blackfoot, badly wounded and dying. The brave was so weak he could not lift his war axe at Preacher's approach. The Blackfoot cursed Preacher, heaping great insults on Preacher and his entire family, including his horses, his dogs, and his bastard children, if any. "Left you here to die, did they?" Preacher asked when the brave ran out of steam. The Blackfoot curled his lips and snarled at Preacher. "No need to feel hard at me," Preacher told him. "I didn't shoot you. If I'd shot you, you'd be dead." "Finish it," the brave gasped, speaking English. "All right," Preacher said, and bashed him on the head with the butt of his hawken. It was done with no malice. If Preacher had been found belly shot as bad as the brave, with his guts hanging out the hole in his back, knowing there was no hope, he'd want someone to do the same to him. Preacher was a lot of things. Mainly, he was a realist. He stayed in the timber and brush, moving carefully and silently. And skirting a little meadow, he worked his way up another ridge. The sight before him brought him up short. Row after row of dead or dying Indians lay in the shallow meadow. Preacher squatted down by a tree and eyeballed the gruesome sight. He had never seen anything like it in all his years. There must have been 500 or more Blackfeet all laid out in rows, most of them dead. But Preacher knew the defenders of the fort hadn't killed near that many. Most of the dead and dying had just been too weak to go on. They used up everything they had during the night fighting and staggered back to this place to die. Probably the place had been all picked out beforehand. Damnedest thing he'd ever seen. He made his way back to the fort and hailed the front gate. "Preacher," he called, "I'm coming in. Lieutenant, you got to see this side. It's something you can tell your grandbabies about for sure." Lieutenant Maxwell Smith took 10 men with him,
leaving the senior sergeant commanding those troops back at the fort. Gray Bull walked with Preacher back to the little valley of death. Maxwell Smith removed his tunic and laid it over the body of the raped and dead woman.
"Dumb move," Preacher told him.
"What do you mean, sir?" the young officer said, his eyes flashing. One simply did not say something like that to an officer in front of his men.
"She'd been hopped on half the night by Injuns dying with the pox. Pox germ stays alive a long time, so I'm told. Now you got to fetch your jacket back with a stick and boil it out good before you even think about putting it back on."
Preacher turned his back to him and walked on. Maxwell Smith arched one eyebrow and slowly smiled very ruefully. "Indeed. Yes, quite right. Come on, men," he said to his troops. They stood on the crest and looked down into the small valley.
"Incredible," one of the enlisted men said. "We best start gathering up brush and pile it on the bodies," Preacher said. "Graybull, you want to take a couple of the men and start some backfire so as we don't set the whole damn forest ablazing?"
"I'll do her."
"Some of those savages are still alive out there," Maxwell Smith pointed out.
"They won't be for long," Preacher told him.
"Preacher," the officer said softly, "I won't permit you to burn people alive."
Preacher stared at the man for a moment. "I was planning on shooting the ones near death, Smith. Believe me when I tell you they'd want it that way."
"I won't permit that either."
"You ever seen pox close up, Smith? The flesh rots? Go down there and take a good look."
There was anguish in the young officer's eyes. This was a decision that no man should be forced to make. Lieutenant Jefferson Maxwell Smith was going to have to make it, and do it quickly, for the stench from the little valley was already getting strong.
"Do what you think is right," Preacher finally told him,
after several moments of silence while the two men stared at one another. Neither of them had blinked.
"I'll leave Crable here with you, and I'll go back to the fort and start burning the bodies back yonder. Just remember this. You've been scratched. But that don't mean you can't catch you a small dose of the pox. You were careful now, you hear?"
"I hear you, Preacher," Maxwell Smith said, his tone low. Preacher went back to the fort and organized volunteers to help drag off and burn the bodies of the dead. They tied rags around their mouths and pulled on gloves. Those that did not have gloves wrapped rags around their hands in an attempt to avoid flesh contact with the dead. Those at the fort would not know it until months later, but this epidemic of smallpox killed nearly 2,000 Mandan and nearly 6,000 members of the Blackfoot tribe. The Blackfoot's power on the plains was greatly reduced, and they were never again the power they once were. From the Missouri River westward, thousands of Indians died from the white man's disease. In the year 1837, doctors were aware that injections of the cowpox virus would immunize people against smallpox. The Hudson's Bay Company had sent great amounts of smallpox vaccine to its traders, and many Indians were saved because of that vaccine. Most of the Indians who refused to be inoculated died. At the fort, Preacher and the others worked swiftly to drag off the bodies of the dead and burn them, while others stood guard, attempting to frighten away or, as was usually the case, killing the many buzzards that angrily fought to tear and rip at the dead and bloated and infected flesh. Women kept huge vats of water boiling constantly, for every bit of clothing had to be boiled and sterilized. The smallpox virus could survive for months in the most unlikely of places. Knowing that, nothing could be left to chance. Before the epidemic would run its course, entire tribes would be wiped out, or very nearly so. Some of the Indians attempted to combat the disease by rolling in fire, giving everything they had to medicine men, taking sweat baths. Many killed their own families in desperation, killed their horses, and killed themselves by the most gruesome of methods, often shoving arrows, knives, or other sharp objects down their throats. Of the Mandans, only a handful survived. All in all, more than 15,000 Indians would die. That is more than would die fighting the army and the settlers during the rest of the century, before the western frontier was finally tamed. It was a grim-faced, haggard and haunted-eyed young British officer who, along with his men, dragged back into the fort just before dusk. Preacher did not ask him what he had done back in the Valley of Death. He did not have to. He had heard the shots and seen the smoke. "Bad," Grable told Preacher. "That boy growed up a whole lot this day." "So did the pilgrims," Preacher replied. "It's been tough on them burying them folks they come westward with. It's been hard on me burying the young children them foolish parents kept out of the fort. But I can't get the thought out of my head that there's a lot of grieving Injun mamas and daddies that it's just as tough on. And it's going to be a terrible thing when the whites really get to crowding in this country," Gray Bull opined. "It's got to the point now where a man can't hardly ride 4 or 5 days without seeing a white family. I tell you, Preacher, the ruination of the high country is fast coming on us. Makes a man just want to sit down with a jug of good rye whiskey and get drunk, don't it? That might not be a bad idea." "There's a small problem, Gray Bull, 'cause there ain't no more whiskey to be had here at the fort."
"What?"
"It's true. The company doctor used it all easing the pain of them that got wounded."
"That's disgusting."
"But true." Several rather matronly-looking ladies marched up to the two mountain men and stood glaring at them, hands on hips. "Into the fort," one told them. "Go waggle your bustle and flap your mouth somewheres else," Preacher told them. One of the ladies, just about the same size as Gray Bull, grabbed him by one ear and marched him off toward the front gate, with Gray Bull hollering and bellering loud enough to wake the dead. "Don't crowd me," Preacher warned the group, which was growing in number. "Get in there and strip down to the buff," another of the ladies told Preacher. "We got fresh hot water and lots of soap waiting for you."
"I'll take my bath in private, thank you," Preacher told her. "Now be off with you."
"Move," she told him. Preacher noticed there was a wicked look in her eyes. He really got nervous when Melody appeared in the group, holding a towel and a bar of strong lye soap. She smiled at him.
"Get away from me," Preacher warned them all.
About 900 pounds of determined female, and in most cases, dubious pulchritude, moved closer. "You're a rake and a reprobate," one lady told him. "And most likely those terms are mild, but you are going to take a bath and take it now."
"You'll play hell giving me one."
Four of the larger ladies moved in and grabbed him by legs and arms and bodily lifted him off the ground and toted him inside the walls of the fort.
"Unhand me, goddammit," Preacher roared.
"Right down to the buff," Melody said, then started laughing. 13.
"Them women took my damn clothes,"
Gray Bull roared as he sat in a wooden tub filled with hot water. The water had already turned black.
"I ain't got nary a stitch on."
"Well, what the hell do you think they done to me?" Preacher bellered. "I ain't sitting in this tub with no suit of clothes on myself.
That big fat one wanted to know if I needed some help in a washing myself. Damn women is sure getting pushy nowadays. Next thing you know, they'll have the vote, too."
"That'll never happen," Preacher said, finding the bar of soap and working up a lather. Melody walked up behind him and dumped a bucket of hot water on his head. Preacher jumped up with a roar. Melody eyeballed him from knees to neck.
"My, my," she said approvingly. "You brazen hussy,"
Preacher hollered. "You about as much a missionary as I is President of the United States." Laughing, she strolled away, humming and swinging the bucket, among other things.
That woman's got her bonnet cocked your way, preacher,
Grable warned.
You best make tracks quicker than a coon can wash his supper, at least as soon as you get your clothes back. And sit down. You ain't no sight to behold when you're all together.
When a nearby gaggle of women started pointing at him and giggling, Preacher sat back down in the tub. He was red with embarrassment from his nose to his toes.
I reckon I was some dirty,
Grable said, looking down at the dark water which had dead fleas floating in it. Lye soap was hell on bugs.
I'd never knowed you when you wasn't.
Preacher?
What?
When I come out here, feller by the name of Jim Madison was president.
Who is now, you reckon?
Last I heard, when I was in St. Louis 4 or 5 winters ago, it was a man named Jackson.
I reckon he still is, but I can't rightly say.
That woman that's got her eye on you, she really a missionary?
I don't much think so. I never seen no Bible thumper that sassy.
Where in the hell is our clothes?
They burned 'em, Grable said mournfully.
Burned 'em? Why didn't they just boil 'em good? I ain't had them clothes on more'n a month.
I'd had them skins of mine on considerable more than that,
Grable admitted.
I reckon they was kind of greasy.
You feel all right, preacher?
Oh, hell, yes, Bull, I'm fine. I'm sitting here naked as a jaybird. A gaggle of females done burned my clothes, and a half-crazy woman is making improper advances toward me. I never felt better.
That ain't what I meant.
Oh. Yeah, I'm all right. I wasn't even scratched the last time I was around the pox, and I didn't catch it.
I reckon once you got it 2 or 3 times, you can't take it no more. I just want to get gone from this place. If you got any sense, you'll come with me.
I made my mark on a company paper. I signed on to scout for the army.
I think the lieutenant is going to ask you to help out with the wagon train, preacher. That foolish wagon master was killed last night.
The lieutenant can go kiss a buffalo. Lord God in heaven and all his angels, man. You think I want to lead them pilgrim people through the wilderness? Do I look like an Israelite? I'd be a stark raving lunatic before we got there.
Preacher threw back his head and roared,
Where's my goddamn clothes?
The trapper with the busted shoulder had a brand new set of buckskins a Mandan woman had made for him. He gladly gave them to Preacher to shut him up. Said all that bellerin' was causing his shoulder to ache. Preacher, clean from the top of his head to his toes, thought he'd best save the skins for the trail. He put on some homespuns the ladies gave him to wear for what time he would remain in the fort. And that wasn't going to be very long if Preacher had anything to say about it. Everybody was breathing as shallowly as possible, for the stench of death was still very strong around the fort. Workers kept the funeral fires blazing throughout the night. Lieutenant Maxwell Smith and the sergeant stayed busy recording the names of the pioneers who died in the fight and any addresses of relatives back east. The next day, Preacher and Grable went out to gather up the loose stock and drive them back to the fort, while the survivors set about trying to piece together wagons from the wreckage. Of the more than 50-odd wagons that had been gathered around the fort, the men managed to put together 20 wagons that looked like they might be able to stand the trek westward to Oregon Territory. Maxwell Smith called Preacher into his office and asked him to have a chair.
Don't want one, Preacher said with a straight face. Ain't got no reason to tote one around.
Sit, sir, Preacher said.
Tea?
Maxwell Smith offered. Whiskey'd be better, but I reckon coffee will do.
I ain't never developed no real taste for tea.
As you wish. The officer asked his orderly to bring them refreshments. He and Preacher sat and stared at one another until the coffee was poured and the tea was steeping.
What you got on your mind, Lieutenant?
You are aware, sir, that you are in British-held territory.
The land's in dispute.
I reckon it'll soon be in American hands.
Don't count on that, sir. You colonists might have a fight on your hands.
Y'all tried that a couple of times, as I recall. Seems like you'd learn after a while.
The lieutenant's smile was very thin indeed. Be that as it may, sir, I'm in command here. Solely in command. I give the orders. To both civilian and military personnel who are at this fort.
Preacher stood up. I'll be gone before you can blink.
Preacher, sit down, please.
Preacher sat.
I need your help, Preacher.
I ain't guiding no damn wagon train.
Maxwell Smith leaned back in his chair and smiled. I can promise you more pay than any guide ever received before you.
Preacher slowly shook his head. I ain't got no use for riches. What am I gonna spend 'em on? Hell, man, I know where they's gold nuggets big as your toe. I got a sackful out there in my possibles bag. There's enough gold in that bag to last me the rest of my years. I ain't got the patience to guide no bunch of hollering, squalling, runny-nosed kids and whining, complaining women and foolish men. You got Gray Bull on the payroll. Give the job to him.
We have to keep him here. What is that man's Christian name?
I got no idea. He got his name 'cause he nearly drowned in the Gray Bull just west of the Bighorns.
I beg your pardon.
20 year or more ago, round 15 or 16, I think he was, he got drunk and fell off his horse. He's been called Gray Bull ever since. Names ain't very important out here, Lieutenant. It's what's inside a man that counts.
By that you mean personal courage, the keeping of one's word when given, never shirking one's duty, and, of course, helping those in need.
The last was spoken with a slight smile. Yeah, something like that.
Preacher had the feeling he was being pushed into a box canyon. This young officer might not know doodly squat about the wilderness, but he sure was good with words.
I am in need, Preacher. Those poor pioneers out there are in need.
Preacher held up a hand.
Whoa, now, just back up. I didn't tell them folks out yonder to head west. They done that all by theyself. Didn't nobody force them to do nothing. Them folks ain't my responsibility. And the truth be known, they ain't yours neither.
So you would just have me send them off westward into a large, unexplored land that is fraught with danger? A land that no man knows?
I know the damn country, Preacher exploded. Unexplored? Why, hell, they's been trappers and traders and the like all over that country for years now. Why? He closed his mouth. Just digging your hole deeper every time you flap your gums, he thought.
Precisely, Preacher, Maxwell Smith said. You know the country they have to travel through. You're the best. You're a legend, Preacher. I marveled about your exploits in England.
You... All right, Preacher said. That's enough grease. You slap any more lard on me and I'll be so slippery I won't be able to sit a saddle. I'll guide your damn wagon train. He shook his head. Lord have mercy on a poor mountain boy like me.
It's the pox, Luke reported back to Bum. He had not entered the fort, only watched from far off and talked to some Mandans he met on the trail. The Blackfeet took the disease and then attacked the fort. They died by the hundreds, but not before they killed more than half of them movers and tore up a whole bunch of wagons. Them folks is busy piecing together wagons so they're going to keep on their journey.
Did you see, Preacher?
Yeah, and the missionaries. They made it through and is all right, appears to me.
What's Red Hand say about this plan of yourn?
He's thinking about it. Gone back to his camp to talk it over with his bunch.
He eyeballed Luke suspiciously.
You didn't bring nothing back with you, did you?
Huh?
Oh. No, I never got close enough to catch nothing. And them Mandans I talked to had already been scratched for the pox.
He looked over at the new men that had joined the group since he'd left.
I know Burke and Dipper. I figured they'd hook up with us. Who's them others? Jennings and Penn rode with the Hawkins gang up in the Northern Territories. They're good boys. Halsey and Wilson busted out of jail back in St. Louis in the winter. Olson's a farm boy from back east. He's wanted for murder. Who'd he kill? His parents. I think he's a good man.
Sounds like it.
I got more news. There's another wagon train coming in later this month. The commanding officer at the fort sent some of his men to make sure it got in all right. There's some talk about the guide of fixing to quit the train. What's left of the pilgrims at the fort is going to wait and hook up with this new train. Who'll be guiding it? Don't know, but Grable's there. I seen him. Hard to miss a man his size. Grable's scouting for the army. I know that to be true. Trapping's about played out. Bum smiled. Preacher. Has to be preacher. Doing what? Guiding a damn train, idiot. Everything is working out just right. We'll get the gold, the women, and have preacher to torture. So we'll just stay right here and keep low, and by the time the trains link up and get ready to pull out, the boys will be healed up for the most part. Bum looked at him. Sometimes you can make sense, Luke. Not often, but sometimes. Luke grinned like a fool. Preacher carefully inspected each wagon. If he found something wrong, he ordered it fixed. From Fort Hall to Fort Vancouver was a long, hard, dangerous pull, with Indians being only a part of the problem. There were rivers and streams to cross, and many of them would be running over their banks this time of the year. There would be broken bones and sprained limbs and squabbles among the movers. And Bum Kelly and his gang. There would be wagon breakdowns. Wheels would come loose and have to be repaired. Tongues would break and harnesses would rip. Kids would get sick and probably one or two would get lost in the woods. A couple of these silly females were pregnant, and that meant they would probably birth along the trail. And Bum Kelly and his boys would surely be cooking up something unpleasant to spring somewheres along the way. He would have to see that additional canvas was brought along, 'cause sure as shooting, some pilgrim wouldn't have his lash down proper, and come a high wind, it'd go sailing off to China. Better lay in a stock of nails and shoes for the animals and make damn sure there was plenty of powder and shot and lead and copper caps and spare bullet molds. There would be weapons aplenty, what with the ones taken from the dead pioneers. And he wished he knowed where Bum Kelly was planning on staging his little surprises, and whether he had throwed in with that damn no-good red hand. Preacher paced the lines of wagons and went over them again. The men and women and children watched him in silence. The kids, big-eyed. He knew what he looked like to them, all dressed out in skins from his feet to his jacket. He looked like some grim-faced wild man, with pistols and knives a-hanging all over him as he prowled up one side of the line, and down the other, never speaking to anyone. He stopped when he came to Richard and Edmund's wagon. The wagon was loaded with new supplies, but none of the quartet was anywhere around. One of the teenage boys in the train was sitting on the seat. "What you doing up there, Tadpole?" The boy, maybe 14 at the most, red hair and freckle face, grinned at Preacher. "Mr. Richard employed me to drive the wagon through the wilderness, sir." "Did he now?"
"Yes, sir, he did. And the money'll come in handy when we get through the wilderness and start the homesteading."
"I reckon so. Your parents don't object to you doing this, do they?"
"Oh, no, sir, not a bit."
"You figure on handling that team of mules all day by yourself, do you?"
"I'm gonna try. We had mules back in Missouri, big reds, just like the ones I'll be driving here."
He frowned.
"The ladies don't know how to drive a team." "I never heard of anything as silly as that, but Mr. Richard and Edmund said they would spell me from time to time."
"That's right considered of them. What are they going to be doing?"
"Riding their mounts, sir. I believe they said something about assisting you."
Preacher choked on his baccy and coughed for a spell. He spat and said, "They's planning on doing what?"
"Assisting you, sir."
as is than me doing what?
Scouting, sir, I suppose.
Preacher looked at the lad, blinked a couple of times, and walked off, muttering, "Sweet baby Jesus. Them two couldn't find their ass ends if their britches was on fire." He spied Melody heading his way and ducked between wagons. Preacher sighed. It was hard to believe that about 6 weeks back he was heading down to Rendezvous without a care in the world. Now he was saddled with a wagon train load of pilgrims, with more coming in, a gang of outlaws on his trail, and dodging a love-struck female who could raise the temperature of a room by 10 degrees just by walking into it. He had even offered Graybull 2 of his gold nuggets to take the train westward.
"Not for that whole entire poke of yourn," the big mountain man told him. "And I'm sorry, 'cause I'll probably never see you no more after you pull out."
"What are you talking about, you big ox?"
"Why, hell's far that blue-eyed, honey-haired missionary lady's got marriage on her mind, and you're the man she plans on hitching up with. She's going to have you out hoeing gardens and plucking petunias and toting her little bag while she shops and the like. Have you lost your mind? I ain't going to marry nobody, a mule-brained, goat-headed giant."
"Yep, I can see it now," Graybull said somberly and sorrowfully, but with a definite twinkle in his eyes. "You clerking in some store, straining your eyes, sorting ribbons and socks and drawers and the like. You be going home to the little lady after work. Only by this time, she'll probably weigh about as much as a buffalo and have 7 or 8 kids a-crawling around on the floor, a-squalling and a-dirtying their diapers and a-hollering for their daddy and..." The pioneer stood in shocked silence, wondering what was going on as Preacher chased a laughing Graybull around the fort, the smaller man waving a tomahawk and cussing at the top of his lungs.
14. Preacher had done everything he knew to do to make the wagon train ready for the trail. Oddly enough, he felt good about what he had done. Even Graybull and another trapper, Jim, had noticed the subtle change in the mountain man.
"You've changed, Preacher," Jim pointed out. "I can't put no finger on it, but there's something different about you."
Graybull smiled.
"I think it's 'cause he knows there's love at the end of the trail."
Preacher sighed and held his tongue. Even though several weeks had passed since the pox had struck the Blackfeet and their bodies had been burned, the smell of death still hung faintly over the area, for not all bodies had been found and burned.
"The patrol that just come in says the second train is about 5 days out."
Graybull wisely changed the subject, not wanting to be again chased around the fort by a tomahawk-wielding preacher.
25 or 30 wagons. With them 3 wagons that rattled in last week, you'll have near about 60 wagons to guide through the wilderness."
"The soldier boys say anything about the guide and the wagon master?" Preacher inquired.
"Only that they picked the guide up in St. Louis, and the wagon master is original from back east somewhere."
"Wonderful," Preacher muttered. "More pilgrims are coming to the promised land." Maxwell Smith walked up in time to hear the last couple of comments.
"This train started out with more than 40 wagons," the officer said. "They survived 6 major engagements with hostiles along the way. That tells me that they are at least trail-wise."
Preacher nodded. "Mules or oxen?"
"More oxen, mules," Graybull said. "That means they won't be toting no heavy supply of grain."
"But they'll be slower," Preacher countered. "On the other hand, engines don't steal oxen as a rule."
"I reckon it'll all balance out. Mainest thing is getting these pilgrims through with their hair."
Preacher turned to Maxwell Smith. "You had any word on Red Hand?"
"Nothing," the British officer replied. "And I was specifically warned about that renegade."
"That worries me," Preacher admitted. "You think Bum may have hooked up with him?" Graybull asked.
"He's done it before," Trapper Jim answered for Preacher.
"I'd like to see the end of both of them, and soon."
But Preacher's thoughts had again shifted to the monumental task that lay before him. He said, "Best you can expect from ox is 12 to 15 miles a day. Mules can give you 18 to 20. We're looking at near about the end of summer before we reach Fort Vancouver. Is losing 10% of these people along the way off the mark, Bull?" "I wouldn't think so. Probably more than that before it's all said and done." 20% of them, Trapper Jim said. "I want the post surgeon to check these new people over good," Preacher told Maxwell Smith. "My bunch is clean of cholera, and I want it to stay that way. Has he got enough laudanum to give us a goodly stock?" "Yes. Since the train started coming this way, he's tripled his orders from the company." He held out several pages. "And this is not going to help matters any."
"What's all them words say?" Grable asked.
"A financial panic has struck the people back east," Maxwell Smith said. "Newspapers are calling it the Panic of 37. And according to this newsletter, thousands of people are making plans to come westward." "Shit." Preacher summed up his feelings with that one bitter word. "There is more," the British officer said, "and none of it is good. Andrew Jackson has retired from office, and nearly all the major New York City banks have closed their doors. A massive financial depression has enveloped the land. Farmers can't sell their agricultural products. Farm surpluses are clogging the markets, and farmers are being forced off the land because they have no money. A massive movement is on for the free lands of the Pacific."
"That's the end for us," Grey Bull said. "Folks that ain't got no money sure can't buy pounds." "He was right in what you said 2 years ago, Preacher. You said the end was in sight and we'd all better brace for it. Them that laughed at you is eating mighty bitter words now."
"Being right don't make me feel good, though," Preacher said. He looked at Maxwell Smith. "What else is writ on them pages? I know that ain't all. Your jaw is hanging low enough to touch your boots, so let's have it all." "Sickness. Back east there are epidemics of typhoid, dysentery, tuberculosis, scarlet fever, and malaria. New Orleans is very nearly quarantined. Cholera is being brought over from Europe and is trekking westward with the human movement."
"Ain't they nothing good at all in them pages?" Preacher asked.
"I'm afraid not, Preacher." Someone among the wagons started singing, the voice liltingly Irish. "Will you go, lassie? Go to the braes of Ballyweather, where the blackberries grow, mang the bonny Highland heather."
"I've tried to tell these folks about this Northwest Trail," Preacher said. "Tried to talk some sense into their heads. But they don't want to listen. Old Joe Walker blazed one trail back in 32 or 33. I went over it with him. That one was hell, boys. Pure hell. This one is only slightly better."
"Fools and dreamers," Grey Bull said quietly.
"But hell, wasn't we the same when we pushed out here, Preacher? I was at Pierre's Hole back in 32 when one of the first bunch of colonizers came a-staggering in. John Wyeth was one of them. But he tried again, and I was told he made it. You'll get them through, Preacher. I kind of wish I was going along."
"Please, feel free to take my place," Preacher said dryly. Preacher laid around the fort for the next several days, waiting for the second train to roll in. Then he would carefully inspect the wagons and give the people a good eyeballing. Besides, them folks would be trail-worn and suffering bad from the wearies. They'd need some rest. He didn't have to work at avoiding Melody now. She'd changed her tactics and had latched on to Lieutenant Maxwell Smith, hoping to make Preacher jealous. The lieutenant squired her about, with her hanging on his arm, shaking her bustle and batting her eyes at him. Preacher only made matters worse by tipping his hat at them every time they met and saying, "Mighty handsome couple you are. Yes, sirree. You sure do compliment each other.
mighty handsome couple. Then he would go away chuckling.
You trying to get the lieutenant killed? Trapper Jim asked one afternoon, after Preacher had tipped his hat and Melody had bared her teeth at him like a mad puma.
The boy needs some excitement in his life. Preacher jerked his head toward a man over by the company store.
You know that hombre over there?
I ain't say that I do. He drifted in last evening. Name's Luke.
Trapper?
No traps or pelts on his pack horse. I don't much cotton to him, Preacher. He's a tad shifty-eyed to suit me.
What's he riding?
Big gray with a reworked brand. Of course, that don't mean nothing. As many folks that's been killed trying to come west, that horse could have belonged to anybody.
Yeah, Preacher said. But he was unconvinced. After Jim had wandered off, Preacher walked over to the store to eyeball the man called Luke. He stood on the rough-hewn log porch and stared at the young man. Luke smiled at Preacher. He did not receive a returning smile.
You want something? Luke asked in a nervous voice.
Preacher was known from the Big Muddy to the Blue Waters as a man a body had best not mess with. Preacher didn't immediately reply. He was busy studying the clothes the young man had on. He had a feeling he'd seen that jacket somewhere before.
Yeah, he knew he had. But where?
Then it came to him. At the ruins of the ambushed wagon train. He'd tried that jacket on himself and found it too tight across the shoulders. Of course, that didn't mean the feller had done anything wrong. Preacher had taken clothes there himself. Only a damn fool leaves usable clothing to rot in the weather if he's able to put them to use. But not to sell or barter. A man had to draw a line somewhere. Luke's right hand drifted to the pistol tucked down behind his belt. A movement that did not escape the eyes of Preacher. Then something else returned to Preacher. Edmund had known the man who owned that coat. He had found his body and put the coat on over his tortured flesh before they dragged off the bodies and caved the earth over them. That meant...
Goddamn grave robber, Preacher told the young man.
What'd you mean, Preacher?
How'd you know who I was?
Preacher demanded.
I asked and somebody told me.
Who?
I disremember exactly.
You're a damn liar. Lieutenant Maxwell Smith and Melody came strolling by about that time. They both was going to have to buy new shoes if that second wagon train didn't soon get here, and they all could get gone.
Here now, Maxwell Smith said. What's going on here?
Look closely, Melody, Preacher said. You recognize the jacket this grave robbing scum is wearing?
Why?
She peered at the frightened Luke.
That's the suit coat we buried poor Mr. McNally in. Edmund put it on the poor man himself.
That's right, Preacher said grimly. Luke grabbed for his pistol and Preacher kicked the young man on the knee, knocking him off balance. Preacher stepped forward and busted Luke on the side of the jaw with a big hard fist. Luke went down, addled to his toes. Preacher jerked the pistol out of the man's breeches and looked at it. The name Blaylock was carved in the butt, along with Boston, Mass., 1832. Gray Bull had come at a running lumber and jerked the now very badly frightened Luke to his feet, holding him by his neck with a huge hand.
Where'd you steal this, boy?
Preacher said, holding up the pistol.
I ain't stole nothing, it's mine. My pa gave it to me.
What's your pa's name?
Wilbur Mason.
From where?
Maryland.
Preacher smiled. Do you know what's carved here, boy? He traced the words with a blunt finger.
Yeah, my pa's name.
Where was your pa back in 32?
In the ground dead. Fever got him and my sister.
Then how come this pistol's got the name Blaylock carved on it, along with Boston, Mass., 1832?
Luke shut his mouth and shook his head.
I thought you told me you couldn't read words,
Melody asked the mountain man.
I lie on occasion, Preacher told her, and I didn't say I couldn't read. I said it had been a long time since I had, that's all.
What else have you lied about?
She pressed him. This ain't the time to go into that. Preacher looked at Luke. You ride with Bum and his trash, don't you? You come in here to spy for him, didn't you?
I don't know no one named Bum Kel.
Luke's eyes darted from person to person like a child caught with his hand in the cookie jar as he realized he had, more than likely, just stuck his head into a hangman's noose. He knew the British had issued death warrants against Bum and anyone who rode with him.
Then how did you know his last name?
Maxwell Smith asked.
I heard it one time, Luke told them. But I don't ride with no gang. I ain't done nothing wrong except taking this here coat off on a dead man. Critters had pulled him out from under the cave-in in the brush and had been eating on him. I took his coat because I needed it, and then I buried him proper. Took me the better part of an hour to dig the hole. I even spoke words over the grave.
You a lying son, Trapper Jim said, walking up and eyeballing the young man.
I know you. You're Luke Chatfield. You're wanted for murder back in the Ohio Territory.
It's a state now, Melody said, admitted and recognized in 1803, I believe. How long have you been out here?
I was born here, Jim said. My daddy was half grizzly and half wild tornado, and my mama was a pony.
Preacher looked at him.
Why, pony, Preacher grinned. I knowed there was something I didn't like about you.
Luke was tossed into the post stockade and would be taken, sooner or later, to the Northern Territories for trial. Bum was a gutsy outlaw, but all suspected he was smart enough not to attack a fort under the protection of the crown, not for someone as unimportant and blatantly worthless as Luke Chatfield. Luke had given up protesting his innocence the same day he was tossed in the stockade. Now he was offering to make a deal in return for his neck.
What do you think? Maxwell Smith asked Preacher.
Preacher shrugged. He's going to tell you that Bum is hooked up with Red Hand and he's going to ambush the wagon train somewhere between here and Fort Vancouver. Big deal. As far as him taking us to where they's camped, forget it. When he don't return on time, they'll know he's either dead or captured in shift camp. But it would be nice to know the size of Bum's gang and how many renegades Red Hand has with him.
And what do we offer him in return for that information?
We don't hang him.
15.
Luke took the offer without hesitation.
Bum's got about 20 men and he's looking for more. Bum wants the gold them missionaries is carrying and he wants the white women. Red Hand's got near about 40 bucks with him.
Way more than enough to give us hell out yonder on the trail, Preacher said after they left the stockade building. Red Hand's people would harass us at night, stealing and killing stock and crippling the wagons. They'll try to drag us down slow and then move in for the kill.
And your plan is? Maxwell Smith asked.
By now this had become a challenge to the mountain man. I'm taking the wagon train through to Oregon Territory. To hell with Bum Kelly and Red Hand.
I really wish I could let you have some men, Preacher. But I don't have the authority to do so.
I'll get them through. There'll be some that don't make it. I'll lose some to accidents. Some will probably fall to diseases and Bum and Red Hand will get some more. But most of them will get through. Or I'll be buried along the trail with them.
Preacher fixed up one wagon and, with Lieutenant Maxwell Smith's permission, commissioned Trapper Jim to drive it through. The wagon would be filled with gigaws to trade with the Indians they would encounter along the way. Preacher stocked the wagon with bolts of calico and Hudson's Bay blankets. He laid in a stock of metal knives and a trunk filled with 3-pound carrots of tobacco. He put in several dozen 1-pound metal kettles and lots of cheap but flashy trinkets.
The second wagon train finally rumbled up to the walls of the fort, and Preacher stood and watched as more kids than he'd seen in many a year poured out of the wagons. Seemed like they never would stop coming, all of them yelling and shouting and giggling and running around like a bunch of idiots. "I sure hope some of them is midgets," he said to Gray Bull. The huge mountain man slapped Preacher on the back. "I got to go scouting, old son. We'll say our hail and farewells now, I reckon." "You be careful out there, you moose," Preacher said, shaking hands with the man. "Stay with your hair now, you hear?" "You ride easy in the saddle, Preacher, and try not to get hitched up with that honey-haired filly." The men grinned at each other, and Gray Bull was gone, walking to his horse to begin his lonely and dangerous job. Preacher stood in the open gates of the fort and watched him until he was swallowed up by the wilderness. He wondered if he would ever see the man again. He'd wondered those thoughts many times. He wondered them when Jed Smith went off on his last adventure back in 30. Comanche's got him. Preacher shook such thoughts from his head and set about locating and acquainting himself with the guide and wagon master of the train. "There appears to be a small problem," Maxwell Smith said, stopping Preacher along the way. "Well, hell, what ain't there been?" Preacher said. "What's wrong now?"
"The guide just quit. Said he was going back to St. Louis."
Preacher dismissed that with a wave of his hand. "I don't need no second opinion in getting this train across the wilderness. How about the wagon master?"
"He seems to be a good solid man. He's staying on."
"Let's go meet him." He introduced himself as Swift, and Preacher immediately sized him up as a man who would brook no nonsense from anyone. Swift was a well-built man of middle age with quick, intelligent eyes. Preacher knew that he was also being sized up by the wagon master. "You've been over the trail?" Swift asked.
"More than once."
"How bad is it from this point on?"
"You ever been to hell?"
"Can't say that I have."
"You're about to get a goodly taste of it. You got any sickness with you?"
"No. At least nothing more serious than blisters and sore muscles. My buds are all in good shape. I insisted that all people be scratched before we left." Preacher's first impression of the man had been correct. Swift knew his business. "We've got sheep, goats, milk cows, and extra mules and oxen," Swift said. "We hooked up with a small train 3 days ago. We are 31 wagons and more than 120 people."
"Most of 'em kids," Preacher remarked.
Swift smiled. "Correct, sir. But I've found them to be well-behaved, and they've become trail-wise. You'll find none of them dashing off to become lost in the woods. One did, back in Wyoming. We never found him. That settled the rest of them down."
"It usually takes something like that to do it, so I've been told. Sorry you had to lose the kid. I got things to say, and I'll be honest with you, Swift. I've been a mountain man for all my life, since I was 12 years old. I come out to this land, 15 years after McKenzie. I wasn't the first, but them that was first, they left. I stayed. Blackfeet probably wouldn't hate the white man so much if Lewis hadn't shot one he caught stealing rifles." A crowd of people from the fort and both wagon trains had gathered around, listening to this buckskin-clad, shaggy-haired, wild-looking man of the mountains. "But they ain't nobody blaming Lewis. He'd done what he had to do. But the Blackfeet still tell the story about how, not too long after that, one of Lewis's own party accidental shot him in the ass. Lewis had to be toted around on a litter for some time. Blackfeet still get a big laugh when they tell that story. Now I'm getting to what it was I was original going to tell you, Swift. I know the trail. I've been over it and back. But I ain't never guided no wagon train filled with females and squalling kids. I ain't got no patience with young'uns, so I'll stay shut of the train as much as possible. One more thing and then I'm done. Don't cross me when I tell you something to do. If I tell you to gather the wagons, you give that order right then and there. If I tell you we're stopping early in the day, I got a reason for it. And I warn you now that we got a bad bunch of outlaws on our trail, and they've hooked up with some renegade Injuns who's headed by a Blackfoot called Red Hand. Man, so I won't have to answer a bunch of goddamn foolish questions. Red Hand was named because there's a big birthmark on his hand that's red. Preacher caught Penelope's eyes and said, kind of like them two dogs I was telling y'all about. Well, Penelope tossed her curls and marched off. I beg your pardon, Swift leaned forward. Did I miss something? No. Where was I? Oh, that's about it, I reckon. You folks have put some hard miles behind you, and you've got some hard ones ahead of you. You folks get busy checking out your wagons and the like. We'll start whenever you people have rested and resupplied. Until then, don't bother me. I don't have the patience for a bunch of damn fool questions from a pack of pilgrims that should have stayed to home in the first place. Preacher nodded his head at Swift, then wheeled about and stalked off without another word.
What an ill-tempered, sharp-tongued, savage man, one woman observed of the mountain man.
Maxwell Smith smiled and said, be thankful you have him to guide you, madam. There is no more qualified man in all the western lands. However, he does take some getting accustomed to. Melody looked at the young lieutenant and rolled her eyes at what had to be the understatement of the year. Preacher squatted on his heels and with a stick drew a crude map in the dirt for Swift and a handful of men from the newly arrived wagon train. We're here, on the Snake. Once we leave here, we'll dip south just a mite, then start angling some north and west. What's left of the Blackfoot is north of us. Also north of us, but that don't mean a whole lot, cause Injuns is roamers. They apt to pop up anywhere, so don't never take nothing for granted. Also is the Nez Perce, the Flatheads, and some Crow and Shoshone. Over here, he jabbed the stick, is the Bannocks, and here is where you'll find the Paiutes. The Yakimas is all over this area here. Don't worry about the Paiutes, they's pretty peaceful Injuns. War ain't very high up their list of things to do. In their society, there ain't no glory or honor in fighting and killing. When a Paiute hears a bunch of whites is coming, they've been known to hide their kids in brush piles or run off in a panic. Shoshone ain't quite that kind to the white man. I get along with them all right, though. I ain't never had no problem with the Washoes, neither. Tell the truth, I ain't expected much in the way of Injun troubles. This is probably going to be the largest wagon train most Injuns west of here has ever seen. Injuns ain't foolish. They ain't going to attack nothing that they think is going to beat them back or cause a lot of deaths and injuries. Them that attacked us here at the fort did so out of rage and desperation. It's Bum Kelly and Red Hand that's going to be causing us the problems. My people will be ready to go in 2 days, Swift said. Preacher stood up. That's when we'll stretch them out, then. On the morning of the pullout, Preacher rolled out of his blankets while the stars were still bright overhead. He saddled a hammer and rigged up his light-loaded pack horse. Most of his things were in the wagon, and tied the reins to the back of the wagon driven by Jim. Richard and Edmund had made their appearance in their new trail gear the day before. Preacher had been wondering about those two, so he was not surprised when they showed up all in buckskin. They'd arranged for one of the Flathead women who'd returned to the fort to make the skins. Damnedest looking sight Preacher believed he'd ever seen in all his days. Melody and Penelope had come up with side saddles. Only God knew where. And they had announced that they would be mounted at least part of the way. Don't make no difference to me if you ride a camel, Preacher told them.
You don't have to be rude, Melody told him.
I ain't, Preacher replied. Just truthful.
Don't you think the new attire of Richard and Edmund makes them look quite dashing? Penelope asked.
I can say truthful that I ain't never seen nothing to compare it with.
Oh, good.
Melody clasped her pretty little hands together.
They were afraid you might laugh at them.
Cry might be a better word, Preacher muttered.
Beg pardon? Melody asked.
Nothing.
Melody found Preacher as he was squatting down drinking coffee and chewing on a biscuit filled with salted fatback.
It was still dark, and the morning was pleasant.
He looked up at her. Both women had been doing a lot of sewing, and each had put together several fashionable riding outfits. She sat down beside him.
I'm so excited I could just fairly burst.
Yeah, me too. A very large, muscular, and smart-aleck teenage boy, about 15 or 16, the Preacher had taken an immediate dislike to, let out a wild yell of excitement.
Idiot, Preacher muttered. If he does that on the trail, somebody's gonna shoot him, and it might be me.
Avery is just full of himself, that's all. He's been flirting with all the girls. Why, he even made eyes at Penelope.
Better watch him around the sheep, then, Preacher muttered.
Beg pardon?
I said, did you get enough sleep?
Oh, yes. How far is it, Preacher?
In miles, I ain't got no idea. We'll be weeks on the trail. We'll do good to average 10 or 12 miles a day over much of this country. There'll be days we'll push 15. Days we'll do 4 or 5. There'll be days we'll never leave camp because of the weather.
You always look on the gloomy side of things, Preacher.
He cut his eyes to look at her. I look at the way things is, Melody, not the way I want them to be. He tossed the dregs of the coffee to the ground and stood up in one smooth, effortless movement. Get your kit together. We'll be pulling out at first light. He turned to leave.
Preacher?
He stopped and looked back at her.
Why do you dislike me?
Preacher stared at her in the semi-gloom.
Many campfires were now being lighted, the pioneers stirring from their blankets, ready to begin the second phase of their long journey to the promised land. The smell of coffee brewing filled the morning air.
I don't dislike you, Melody. Preacher spoke the word softly. Matter of fact, I like you more than I have any woman for in my life. And mayhaps that's the problem. This is my world, Melody. The mountains and the valleys and the plains and the wild things. Yours is all different. I don't fit in your world, and you don't fit into mine. So there ain't no point in starting nothing that neither of us can finish. It's not that I won't change. I can't change. I'm as much a part of this land as the mountains I live in and the winds that blow through the passes. This is where I'll die. You folks back east, you read all about the carryings on of Kit Carson. Melody, I was out here years before that squirt showed up. I was the first white man to see much of this country. It was me that opened up many of the trails that folks are now using. I wasn't alone in doing it, but I was there. I can't leave this country for no length of time. It just keeps pulling me back. It calls to me, Melody, sings to me. It's a part of me, and I'm a part of it. I can go for weeks without hearing the sound of a human voice. And I love it, Melody. I love it. I don't need people the way you do. Hell, I don't even like most people. They want everything that I don't see no need for